And welcome back to today's Topical Currents, Bonnie Berman and Joseph Cooper. And it's time for food and dining. Who hasn't felt badly about having to toss out what was once perfectly delicious food? Most everyone has forgotten to put leftovers back in the fridge or had to face some now spoiled delicacy. And here's an easy-to-digest stat. Most Americans waste around one quarter of the foods they purchase. So Linda Gassenheimer is here with help. She has an expert who specializes in saving perfectly good food. Chef, author, syndicated columnist, and our friend, Linda Gassenheimer.
Well, hi, Bonnie. Hi, Joe. Nice to be with you. Yeah, that statistic is unbelievable. 40% of our food is wasted. So how can we take advantage of the waste to help others? And what can we do personally to avoid this food waste? So our guest today is going to help us out. She's Dana Gunders. She's the author of The Waste-Free Kitchen Handbook, and she has some answers for us. So let's welcome Dana Gunders. Hello.
Hello. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Glad to have you with us, Dana. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Join us. Do you have any questions or comments or some ideas on wasting food or how not to waste food? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
Or email is radio@WLRN.org.
And also with us, back with us, is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. Fred gives the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column that you can read in the Miami Herald or online. And you can also read Fred's wine column in the Saturday Miami Herald. And first, Fred, we want to say congratulations on the new grandbaby.
Well, thank you. It's Harrison Tasker Westbrook, 8 pounds, 10 ounces, born March 15th.
That sort of sounds presidential, Fred.
Oh, yes.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, good-looking kid. Looks a lot like me.
Yeah, we saw the pictures you sent. Thank you. But, Fred, what are we drinking today?
Oh, I'm going to talk about wine for Easter dinner.
All right, sounds good. Well, let's.
I thought you were going to say wine for infants.
No, it's for the grandparents who need it.
And the mother can't have it yet, so because she's right. Feeding the baby, so we have to drink all the wine. It's a shame.
Okay, I'm sure you're up to it. Okay, Dana Gunders, you're a scientist at the National Resource Defense Council. What brought you to writing about food waste?
Well, actually, I didn't start in the realm of food waste. I started off working on agriculture and farming and really looking at, you know, how do we use less water and really do farming in a sustainable way. And as I was doing that, I started stumbling upon these numbers about how much food was going to waste. And I kept thinking to myself, oh my gosh, these couldn't be true. You know, 40% of all the food in this country goes to waste. And about 25% of all the water we use actually goes to growing food that never gets eaten. And I kept thinking, oh my gosh, you know, here we are trying to get farmers to be really efficient with their water and fertilizer and all of that, and yet we're not eating the food at the other end.
You know, that's something we never think about. I mean, what goes into having to grow that food and how that's being wasted? It's another way to look at it.
Exactly. Yeah, and it just—it's a huge resource. It's a huge resource implication. Actually, about half the land across the country goes to agriculture.
Well, so where is most of this food waste happening? Is it on the farms, in the markets, the supermarkets, or at our homes, or maybe all of the above? Tell us.
It is all of the above. You know, there are entire fields that sometimes don't get harvested in farms, and in supermarkets you have, you know, you'll walk in and you'll see these very abundant displays, these big piles of apples and oranges, but really not all of those get sold, particularly the ones on the bottom that get bruised because they're at the bottom of a pile, and things like that. But actually, our homes, consumers in our homes, we represent the biggest chunk of food getting wasted out there, and it's just the lettuce going bad in our fridge and the leftovers we don't get around to eating and everything else you wind up throwing out when you clean out your fridge.
Okay, so well, let's start with some responsibility about waste at home, and give us some hints. If we're going to have that lettuce in the refrigerator and all, how do we avoid having it go rotten?
Well, you know, it really starts with shopping and when you're at the grocery store. Because when you're at the grocery store, that's really where you're committing to your food. So being careful to think about, you know, buying what you eat and eating what you buy is important. Actually, about 55% of all purchases in the grocery store are unplanned. And as you can imagine, when they're unplanned, you don't always get around to eating them in the same way. So,
well, it's kind of hard to walk by those beautiful big red strawberries and not realize you're not going to be home for that week.
Exactly. And that's the trick I suggest is, you know, I mean, if you're somebody who can use shopping lists and plan your meals, then that's extremely effective. If you're more organizationally challenged like I am, just taking a second look in your shopping cart and just thinking about the week ahead for a moment and thinking, when am I going to eat all this? And if you go through each item and you can't think of a time for some of them, then maybe it's better to skip that item.
You know, I loved your tip in the book, which is something I never thought about, is that when you pick up your produce in the produce section, like a lettuce or whatever, and it's been misted with water, that you should shake that water off because it's just going to rot those vegetables. But also, you're paying for the water because it weighs more. I never thought of that.
Yep.
We also had on David Pogue recently, who has a book of tips, and he said with vegetables, herbs, lettuces, all those things, if you just put a paper towel on them and then you put them in plastic, that it will preserve them.
And the supermarkets had those built-in sprayers to make things look like they're fresh out of the garden, and actually they're beginning the aging of the vegetables.
That's right. All right, so... now we've got the food, we've brought it home, and we've been responsible about buying. So what's the best way to store things in our refrigerator?
Right, well, you know, almost everything has its own special way of being stored in an optimal way. And actually in the book we have a directory where you can look up over 85 products and really learn that. For artichokes, for example, if you sprinkle some water on the stem and wrap that with a paper towel, that will help an artichoke stay good for long. Asparagus does well. You know, it's asparagus season right now. If you put it in a jar, and I do this in the door of my refrigerator, and stand it in a jar of water, it will actually last quite a bit longer.
Oh, well, that's interesting, because otherwise I find that if you put something like my parsley and a glass of water to keep it fresh, then the water gets spilled over in the entire refrigerator. Always.
You do need to be careful about that. But it does help keep the herbs or the asparagus more fresh.
Well, I also found that if I just take a wet paper towel, a damp paper towel, and wrap it around the stems of the parsley, let's say, and put that in a plastic bag, that works very well. It'll keep for over a week that way, I found.
Mm-hmm. I could see that. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're sort of living plants still, so the more you can help them get that water that they need, the more alive they'll stay.
How about cucumbers? Those always seem to go bad in our house.
Mushy,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
At the end.
Awful.
But that's what he said. He said you put the paper towel on it, and then you put it in a paper bag, even a cut cucumber.
Well, you know, one thing to remember about cucumbers, and this is true for a bunch of vegetables, is a lot of times people don't really pay too much attention to those drawers in the refrigerator, right? But they do have a purpose, and the best way, their purpose is to preserve humidity, and that helps keep things crisp, and it also creates a different temperature zone in the refrigerator. But if you separate the two drawers that you typically have and you make one your high humidity drawer, so you seal it real tight, or maybe you set it if it has a little knob to high or to vegetable, then you can keep things that need to stay crisp in there. So that's where you'd put your cucumber. It's also where you'd put lettuce and carrots and broccoli and things that tend to wilt. And you keep that humidity in there. That will help. If you set the other drawer to a lower humidity, or maybe you crack it open a little bit, that's good for things that... that tend to rot more, so...
Okay.
Right.
Well, we have a caller here, Brett in Fort Lauderdale. Hello, Brett. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to... had a comment in regards to leftover or pieces of vegetables. Whenever I bake, or I mean, whenever I cook anything, I tend to have extra little pieces left over. So I save them all in a Ziploc bag in the freezer. And whenever that bag is full, I will boil it all and make a vegetable stock.
And make a stock or a soup. Good. That's a great idea. You have to,
exactly.
And that's another point she points out in the book is that we should use our freezer. I know I had some green beans left over the other day and they were going bad, so I just blanched them and then put them in a freezer and we'll use them later. So that's a great idea,
Brent. I also do the same thing with fruit. So if I have some strawberries or blackberries or whatever left over that's getting a little moldy, I will chop them up and make them into a coulis and use it with yogurt.
Well, that sounds great. Well, thank you for your call, Brett. And we're going to go to a break now, but after the break, I want to talk a little bit about eggs. We're coming up to Easter, lots of eggs being used, and you had a great tip in the book about not putting the eggs in the egg case on the door of the refrigerator, to put it inside because the door isn't as cold as inside the refrigerator. So that was very interesting. But we're going to take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. We're talking about food waste in the U.S. with Dana Gunders. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking about the shocking amount of food wasted in the U.S. Up to 40% is wasted. Dana Gunders is the author of The Waste-Free Kitchen Handbook, and she's been telling us what that means to our country, and she's been giving us tips on how we can save some of this waste. But right now, it's Dinner in Minutes time. So we're not going to waste any food because we've planned the dinner in minutes in advance. And it's an herb-crusted lamb steak with wild mushroom rice piaf. Now, this is a great Easter weekend recipe, or you could have it for any time. But what I do is I use a steak cut from the leg of lamb. And if you don't see it in the supermarket, ask the butcher to cut it for you. He makes a slice right through the leg, so it's kind of an oval-looking steak, and it has a little round bone in the center. And I coat that with a mixture of breadcrumbs, fresh sage, a little mustard, and under the broiler for 5 minutes aside. And if you can't find the steak, then use it on lamb chops. It'd be a great little recipe for a quick and easy dinner. The wild mushroom pilaf is a very flavorful dish because the rice absorbs the cooking liquid from the natural juices of the mushrooms.
This sounds pretty ambitious for dinner in 15 minutes.
I bet you could do this, because once you have that steak, you just put the stuff on it and put it on the broiler.
All right.
Joe, it's for you.
Okay.
All right. So if you want the complete recipe, and it's really simple, even Joe can do it, it's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Okay, Tasker, what are we drinking for Easter?
Well, Easter dinner, you know, is not your usual holiday meal. It's not like Christmas because you very seldom roast a goose. And it's not like the 4th of July because you never grill a steak. And it's certainly not like the Super Bowl because you wouldn't be caught dead serving buffalo chicken wings. So when Easter comes, I always look forward to dishes that I hardly ever get the rest of the year. Things like ham, spiral cut, glistening with brown sugar glaze, studded with cloves. Or a leg of lamb redolent of rosemary and black pepper, maybe even stuffed with something exotic like spinach, fennel, goat cheese, or dates.
Is this what you're making, Fred? Sounds really good.
I'm getting hungry. I may make that later today, actually. And while I've never had it, I understand a traditional Easter dessert is a pavlova, which is the base of meringue topped with whipped cream and berries. It sounds great. Linda, have you had that?
Yes, I have, and I've actually made one, Fred.
Oh, very good.
They're very, very famous in England. They use it a lot.
Glad to hear it. So anyway, my job here is to pair wines with all of this, and I can do that. First, so I don't disappoint Linda, I propose a glass of bubbly for each guest the second they walk in the door. It makes them feel welcome. And with the ham, I'd suggest a rosé wine. This is pink meat and pink wine, and it sounds cliche and obvious, but it actually works. And Stoller, S-T-O-L-L-E-R, the Oregon winery, makes a very nice rosé from Pinot Noir. For the lamb, years ago I had roast lamb in Spain with a really top-notch Rioja wine made of the Tempranillo grape. That was perfection. And Marques de Caceres makes one of those for about $15.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it's really nice. And if you can't find that, you can try a California Merlot, maybe the one by Beringer at $8 a bottle. And the Pavlova needs a dessert wine, of course. And I think I'd serve a bottle of Essencia, E-S-S-E-N-S-I-A, which is a sweet wine from the orange muscat grape made by Quadi Winery in California. And it's about $18, so enjoy.
Sounds like some good prices on those wines. Sounds good.
Not bad.
Well, let's go back to Dana Gundis. Dana, we mentioned just before the break about eggs and Easter and all. So there's going to be a lot of Easter eggs for an Easter egg hunt. What do we do with those eggs?
That's right. Well, first, you know, oftentimes around this time of year, you'll see these buy one, get one free, you know, 18 packs of eggs, which is a lot of eggs to use up. And if you find yourself not using them up, make sure that you know that eggs are actually good to eat 3 to 5 weeks after the sell-by date on the package. So,
well, that's interesting. You know, 5 weeks after the sell-by date.
That's right, and that's straight from the FDA telling us that.
Well, let's talk a bit about sell-by dates because there was, you know, if I went through my refrigerator, I could probably find a lot of things that are out of date. But I use them, and I'm still here. But tell us, how do we handle that sell-by date?
Sure. Well, you'll see a variety of dates on food: used by, best by, best if used by, enjoy by, sell by. You know, generally speaking, those are just the manufacturer's estimate of when the product is at its peak quality, you know, when they want to stand by their brand by. But it does not mean the product is spoiled after that date or bad or going to make you sick. And I think that's a pretty common misconception out there. So, you know, when food gets old, that's a natural process of aging. It actually does not make people sick. So you can feel comfortable kind of sniffing your milk and tasting it, and if it smells and tastes fine, you're fine. Now, for eggs, there's a great trick to know, which is that if you put eggs in a bowl of water and they sink, they're still good to eat. But if they float, they've gone bad.
Oh,
well, that's good advice.
Yeah. So now, how do we know that if it's past the sell-by date, and we're a little dubious about this, do we depend on our sense of smell? What do we do?
Yeah. Well, again, for eggs, you know, it's hard to smell them, so that water trick is nice.
Yeah.
For things like milk and cheese and yogurt, dairy products, then smell and taste are a great way as long as they're pasteurized. And, you know, most products out there, with the only products you really need to be careful with are those that they tell pregnant women to avoid. That's the rule of thumb. So things like deli meats and unpasteurized cheeses are things to be careful with.
What about canned foods? I'll bet I could go to my pantry right now and find a can of beans with a sell-by date in 2014.
Yep. And you know what?
You're not alone, Fred.
Yeah, I mean, canned foods can last at least 7 years is sort of the estimate that I've heard food safety
really?
Experts use.
Isn't it like if it bulges, then it's no good?
Yes, if it bulges, then something's gone wrong with the canning, and that's definitely not something to eat. Or if they're dented as well, then you should be careful. But as long as the can is fine, it can last years and years.
Well, here's another problem. We're talking about Easter weekend coming up, and you know, could be a lot of buffets, a lot of family, and you know, even though we think our houses are air conditioned and cooler, they may not, you know, they may not be as cool as they should be. So what do we do about the food and the leftovers? What are some hints here?
You know, when you're hosting a dinner like that, one of the best things to do is to make sure that you have some containers on hand that you can send your guests home with, because, you know, we tend to host these big dinners. There's almost always leftovers. And I think people get a little bit shy about asking to take them home. So as the host, if you can have containers and really offer those up for people, that sometimes can get them over the hump, and also the logistics of how they're going to get it home.
You can also force it on them.
That's right.
What about Easter eggs that have been out in the backyard for a couple hours awaiting to be discovered by kids?
You know, boiled eggs are pretty stable. So if it's just been a couple hours, you're probably fine. If it's been much longer than that, you probably want to be careful.
If you find one from the previous Easter, you might want to throw it away.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, you know, that's all very interesting. And I always think that, you know, you have leftovers on the table and they're out for a few hours. Then you put it in the refrigerator. Then you take it out the next day and you leave it out again. And that can cause trouble.
That's right. You want to be careful with having food out on the counter for too long, because at that temperature, you know, that's there, it encourages more bacteria to grow than if it's in the refrigerator.
So put
certainly
it away.
The quicker you can refrigerate things, the better. But it's perfectly fine. And one thing to be sure to do is those things that you microwave, make sure you're really microwaving them thoroughly, and that'll keep your food good and safe. Mm.
Right. That's a good idea. And also, you know, don't put out everything at once. You know, maybe have smaller platters and replenish them might be an idea.
That's a great idea. And also, when you have a big buffet out, if you, you know, have smaller plates that are used, people are less likely to sort of overfill their plate past what their stomachs can handle. And, of course, they can always go back for more.
Right. Okay, well, we have so many more questions. I'm sorry we couldn't get to our callers.
Or emailers.
We could have gone on for a long time, but it's been a very interesting week. Dana Gundes, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Her book is Waste-Free Kitchen Handbook, and it's really well worth a read, and there's a whole chart there on how to store food and how to buy food. It's a really interesting book. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Joe Cooper and Bonnie Berman, great to be with you.
Great, and congratulations, Fred.
Well, thank you.
Next week, we're going to be talking with Gino Paparella from Gino's Italian Market. He's going to tell us how to choose the best cheese and olive oil in all Italian foods. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.